My dear friends, my Kol Tikva family. As I write these last words in my last High Holy Day address as your rabbi, I truly am at a loss for words. After 17 years as your rabbi, after 40 years as someone's rabbi, I'm not sure I have anything new to say. Never mind, I'll find something. In searching for a Jewish paradigm for such an occasion, I've tried to channel my inner Moses. After 40 years of leading the children of Israel through the wilderness, he also had to choose his words carefully in his final address to the people before they crossed over into the promised land. In the book of Deuteronomy, Moses addresses the people in several discourses, recounting their experiences together during their long trek through the wilderness. Don't worry, I'm not delivering any new tablets today. In his final discourse, Moses addresses the congregation with the words, we shall soon read from the Torah, words which have shaped Jewish identity to this very day. Moses proclaims, Atem nitzavim hayom kulchem lifnei Adonai Eloheichem. You are standing here today, all of you, before the Lord your God, to enter into this brit, this sworn covenant. This sworn covenant? What exactly does that mean? A covenant is a binding agreement between two parties. In this case, God and the children of Israel, the Jewish people. Each party agrees to certain obligations and to be loyal to one another. Ever since we stood together at Sinai, whether you take it as literal fact or as sacred mythology, we Jews have felt compelled to live up to the terms of this covenant, of this brit. This morning, I would like to define those terms as I have understood them and hopefully lived them and modeled them through the course of my career. I believe these are the core elements which have given shape to our identities as Jews throughout our 4,000 existence as a people. As my last oration, allow me to speak to these five defining aspects of my rabbinate, which I hope will frame the definition of what it means for all of us to be ben or bat brit, a son or daughter of the covenant. The first of these is a phrase taken from the Talmud, which we recite every morning in our prayers, as it states, these are the things that are limitless. Elu dvarim she'ein lehem shi'or. These are the things that are limitless, of which a person enjoys the fruit of this world while the principle remains in the world to come. They are honoring father and mother, engaging in deeds of compassion, arriving early for study morning and evening, graciously dealing with guests, visiting the sick, providing for the wedding couple, accompanying the dead for burial, being devoted in prayer, and making peace among people. But the study of Torah is equal to them all. As it says in the Hebrew, V'tamu Torah keneged kulam. But the study of Torah is equal to them all. How is it possible for the study of Torah to be equal to all of the above? Simply, the rabbis tell us, because it leads to them all. Simply put, the word rabbi means my teacher. To be a rabbi is to teach, to study, to learn, to be engaged in words of Torah, even until our last breath. I love the story told about a venerated rabbi who, late into his 90s, was revered for his learning and his wisdom. As his end drew near, he was surrounded by his disciples, his family, his friends. As time dragged on, it was only natural that from time to time, their focus of their attention drifted. As they began to talk amongst themselves, the rabbi summoned one of the children to come by his side. He took out a book and began to read to the child, teaching him the Aleph Bet. And with the sound of a bet upon his lips, he breathed his last. not just rabbis, but all Jews are commanded to study sacred Jewish texts our entire lives. Every day we are bidden, la'asok b'divrei Torah, to study words of Torah. On Shavuot, we stay up all night studying, and on Simchat Torah, we demonstrate that the learning never ends as we finish reading of the Torah and immediately start all over again. It states in the Talmud, lo am ha'aretz chasid, which means an ignorant person cannot be truly pious. And one of the three functions of a synagogue to this very day is to be a Beit Midrash, a center of Jewish learning. So why is this aspect of our covenantal relation with God so important? First, because when our minds, which are truly manifestations of the divine, are engaged in study of sacred texts, it's as if we commune with God. Our souls intersect with the eternal truths we drink abundantly from, ancient wells of wisdom, when we study sacred texts. Second, when we study words of Torah, we refine our character. We shape our capacity to become the best versions of ourselves, to embody the virtues of being a mensch. That's why we at Kol Tikva call our religious school Mensch University. Truly, Mensch University, because that's what it should all lead to. And finally, when we study, we deepen our appreciation of our traditions, literary masterpieces, and connect with the generations of our people who have pored over these same texts year after year for eons of time. Since the beginning of our time together, whether you have studied here at Bagels and Bible on Shabbat mornings, imbibed Jewish wisdom at Talmud 101, became an adult bar or bat mitzvah, or an adult confirmand, studied for conversion to Judaism, or taking classes online, you have fulfilled the terms of the covenant which bind us to our fellow Jews, past, present, and future. And with God too. Jewish learning is a foundational aspect of our core identity as B'nai B'rit, children of the covenant. The second core element I have endeavored to embody in my rabbinate, that is the heart of our covenant with God, is to be Rodef Tzedek, to be one who pursues justice and righteousness. As it is stated in the book of Deuteronomy, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdof, justice, justice, you shall pursue. The prophetic voice in our tradition calls us to build a more just and compassionate society. It is not by accident that we read on the holiest day of the year biblical texts that exhort us to be holy like God, fulfilling the commandments, the mitzvot, which define what a just and moral and compassionate world must entail. Listen to the words of the prophet Isaiah, which we'll soon read in the original Hebrew. The prophet states, is this the fast I look for? A day of self-affliction, bowing your head like a reed and covering yourself with sackcloth and ashes? Is this what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the fast I look for, says the prophet? To unlock the shackles of injustice, to undo the fetters of bondage, to let the oppressed go free and to break every cruel chain? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and to bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to clothe them, and never to hide yourself from your kin. As I apply these words to our world today, I am more distraught than ever before. I used to believe that freedom and goodness over time would grow as we become more enlightened. Instead, we continue to witness the erosion of freedom, the perversion of democratic norms, the transfer of wealth to economic elites at the expense of the least among us, and the imposition of cultural worldviews that threaten diversity and multiculturalism. Roe v. Wade overturned. Women's health care put at risk. Transgender rights denied. LGBTQ plus rights threatened, including possibly the right to same-sex marriage, and the erasing of rainbow sidewalks. Books are banned in libraries across the nation. Federal museums are under a microscope for what they can and cannot exhibit. Masked and hooded ICE agents arrest undocumented immigrants without due process under the law. Unprecedented mid-decade redistricting to gain congressional seats ahead of the midterm elections is now the new norm. Once independent departments of state, such as the DOJ and the FBI, collude with the executive branch in plain sight. The big, beautiful bill gives tax breaks to the top 1% and large corporations, while Medicaid funding and food subsidies for children are dramatically diminished. The administration's defunding of scientific research has caused a brain drain, as our best and brightest seek employment in other countries. Additionally, the defunding of environmental protection, food safety, and emergency management and weather forecasting through NOAA threaten American health, safety, and security. Oh, and this too. Using organs of the federal government to muzzle dissenting opinions, such as canceling late-night television hosts, is a direct assault on our First Amendment rights. Depending on your political orientation, you may or may not believe anything I've said is jarring or inappropriate. You certainly have that right. And I'm not here to convince you otherwise. But what I will claim is that our Jewish heritage, dating back to biblical times, has always seen itself as having something to say on the issues of the day, just as Isaiah spoke out in his day. My rabbi and many like him, understood that Judaism must hold us to account with regard to building a just, moral, and compassionate society. It may have been unpopular in his day, but my rabbi, Rabbi Henry Cohen, marched for civil rights in the mid-60s, spoke out against the Vietnam War, and as a synagogue, we housed and settled Cambodian boat refugees. For Rabbi Cohen of Philadelphia and Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, religion meant praying with your feet. To be a Rodei Tzedek is to be a pursuer of justice. It's not about loyalty to any political party or candidate for high office. It is about protecting freedoms and expanding them, always aspiring thereby to build a more just and perfect union. It's about upholding the separation of powers as described in the Constitution and the Emoluments Clause, which forbids our leaders from enriching themselves while in office. Is about caring for the least among us by providing social safety nets to reduce hunger and homelessness. It is about, first and foremost, about swearing loyalty to our Constitution, which is the blueprint for safeguarding democracy, rather than fealty to any one particular leader. A little later, in the book of Leviticus, we're going to read the following words. Let them sink in. This is not me speaking. These are the words of God. You shall not steal, you shall not deceive or lie to one another. You shall not oppress or rob your neighbors. You shall not hold a wage of a laborer beyond its due time. You shall not insult the deaf. You shall not place a stumbling block before the blind. You shall not do injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor or defer to the powerful. You shall judge your neighbor with fairness. You shall not oppress the stranger, for you know the heart of the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. The stranger in your midst shall be to you as the native born, and you shall love them as yourself. You shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against the poor, the other, the stranger, the sojourner, but you shall love them as you love yourself. Cease to do evil, learn to do good. Seek justice, correct oppression, defend the orphan, plead for the widow. The second hallmark of my rabbinate and a cornerstone of identity is to be one who pursues justice and righteousness as a mitzvah enjoined upon us by a prophetic tradition. The third foundation upon which I have built my rabbinate is Ahavat Zion, love and support for our Jewish homeland in Eretz Yisrael. There is probably no topic I have spoken about more in the last 40 years than Israel, For me, Israel was and continues to be the greatest communal project of the Jewish people in the last 2,000 years. The story of the modern Zionist movement, from its earliest dreamers and visionaries like Herzl and Nordau, to the birth of a nation reborn on its ancient soil, rising like a phoenix out of the ashes of the crematoria, is nothing short of miraculous. And with all the criticism of Israel, and there's surely enough to go around, some warranted, some not, I want to remind you that there is only one Jewish state. And it's a miracle that it exists to this day. And I want to remind you that had there been a Jewish state in 1939 through 45, 6 million more Jews would be alive today. And when those who dare speak against the idea of Israel existing, let them look in the eyes of 1.5 million Jewish children who had nowhere to go when the world closed their doors. They would still be alive. Robin and Howie Crooks gave me a book, this big, thick book. In it, only this, the word Jew 6 million times. This is what 6 million Jews looks like. The incredible achievements in every sphere of intellectual pursuits, in technology and biomedical breakthroughs, attest to the inordinate number of Nobel Prizes awarded to Israelis. It's astonishing how many per capita. The forging of a messy yet functioning democracy in a sea of dictators and autocratic monarchs on every side, who for 77 years sought her annihilation in war after war after war, and still do, is unfathomable. That the startup nation won the admiration and international investors, mega corporations, and billionaire shareholders attest to its vitality. Israel fulfilled its number one obligation in the aftermath of the Holocaust, when all doors were shut to us, to be a safe haven for world Jewry, welcoming immigrants from over 70 countries, saving remnants of Jewish communities in Yemen, Morocco, Ethiopia, and the former Soviet Union. I could go on and on waxing poetic about the undeniable successes of the Zionist project, but there is a dark side which threatens so much of what has been achieved. The cost of Israel's reclamation of land, we must admit, was at the expense of Arabs who lived in the land prior to 1948, who would later identify themselves as Palestinians. Sadly, the legitimate Palestinian grievances are caught up in a convoluted web of violence and counterviolence, horrific acts of terror on both sides, competing narratives that rely on partial truths that suit one side or the other, illegal settlements on occupied territory, military occupation that is metastasized into a place where some Jewish settlers feel it free to set fire to Palestinian communities with impunity, multiple failed attempts at diplomacy, and bitter enmity, fear, and loathing. This has all poisoned the Zionist cause. The failure of visionary leadership on both sides, with the exception perhaps of Yitzhak Rabin, has condemned Israelis and Palestinians to 100 years of ever-increasing alienation, mistrust, and violence. The situation is only compounded by other Arab nations who have used the Palestinians as a sacrificial lamb in their efforts to delegitimize Israel, caring little for Palestinians themselves, using them only for their desire to rid the Middle East of any Jewish sovereignty in their midst. Think of Iran. Do they really care about the Palestinians? Do they care about the Middle East without an Israel and their proxies, Hamas and Hezbollah? Then Israel unilaterally in 2005 left Gaza, giving Gazans a chance to build something wonderful, only to be hijacked by Hamas, turning Gaza into a terrorist base to repeatedly attack Israel. These are facts. Instead of building an infrastructure that could build the betterment of life, they built tunnels, subjecting their people to intolerable living conditions, sadly enforced by Israel's need for security, and aided and funded by Iran. Hamas methodically planned its long-awaited, premeditated massacre of 1,200 Israeli citizens on October 7, 2023. I think it's almost 2 years. And here we are today. Almost 2 years later, Israelis living their lives with one foot in a bomb shelter, 48 hostages, maybe 19 still alive, still being held in captivity. A war that has caused tens of thousands of Palestinian deaths. Over 900 Israeli soldiers killed. Impossible living conditions for some 2 million Gazans, some on the verge of starvation. A Hamas refusal to negotiate in good faith. And an equally intransigent Israeli leadership, led by a corrupt prime minister looking to avoid going to jail, supported by messianic, ultra-religious nationalists who only desire the expulsion of Palestinians from Gaza and the annexation of Gaza to Israel. Oh, what a terrible mess. And as usual, there's enough blame to indict either side and catastrophic suffering everywhere. What will be? God only knows. But I do know this. Democracies are in the hands of the people. Israel is still a democracy with a free and with free and fair elections and a free press. Millions of Israelis have had enough, week after week in the streets protesting. And despite their distrust and loathing of the other side, they recognize that Hamas has been significantly downgraded. The hostages must come home. A plan for the day after must be implemented, and that the war must end. Despite the horrific extreme right-wing government in power, which I detest, I still believe in the Zionist cause and in Israel whose best days still lie ahead. Think of some of the worst periods in American history, such as the Civil War, and tens of thousands of Americans killed one another, McCarthyism, Vietnam, and Watergate. And remember how we rose to greater heights after much turmoil and division. To be an Ohev Tzion, a lover of Zion, is not to be a fair-weathered friend, but to be steadfast in supporting Israel as a Jewish state unconditionally, because it's the only one we got. And be fiercely critical of Israel when she fails to live up to the values and ideals proclaimed in her own Declaration of Independence. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. And sometimes you even need to take away the keys. But when we do not stop caring about them. In fact, we must care even more. The fourth pillar upon which I have built my rabbinate is our Jewish obligation to build a Kehila Kedosha, a sacred community defined by caring, kindness, and a striving to live by the high ideals it espouses as its mission. I will remind you that Kol Tikva's mission is in its very name, as its founders, some of them who are here today, chose intentionally not Temple Kol Tikva, but Congregation Kol Tikva, emphasizing the people who make up the community, not the edifice. As is stated on our website, Congregation Kol Tikva is more than a synagogue. It's a vibrant, welcoming community where everyone can feel at home. Its mission is to foster deep connections in a warm and supportive environment through spiritual enrichment, lifelong friendships, and a proud sense of belonging. It's about relational Judaism, recognizing that a synagogue ultimately is not defined by its programs, services, and events, but by the lasting bonds of friendship which are intentionally forged between members of the community. It's about being there for one another in good times and bad, clasping hands as we navigate our way through the valley of the shadow of death, rejoicing with bride and groom, visiting the sick and supporting one another through the various vicissitudes of life, such as divorce, financial hardships, and healthy aging. I am so proud of who we are, of what we have built together. And while there's always room for improvement, Congregation Kol Tikva is truly a key lakidusha. With over 100 individuals on our caring committee, with Shiva minions where many turn out for people they barely know, to a myriad of social activities through Sisterhood and Brotherhood and other synagogue events, Congregation Kol Tikva is known for its warm embrace and inclusion. I think the best evidence of how Kol Tikva strives to be a Kila Kedusha is indicated by the campaign feasibility study that was conducted this past year. The overwhelming number of participants, when asked to choose just one word that would express the attribute to describe Congregation Kol Tikva among all others, the vast majority chose the word home. Home. After 17 years as a member of this sacred community, if home is where the heart is, then my heart belongs to Congregation Kol Tikva. Which brings me to my last words to you, my Kol Tikva family, on this holiest day of the year. The value of Hakarat Tov, expressing gratitude and appreciation, is an essential element of Menschlichkeit. Modeling this behavior has been one of my goals throughout my rabbinate. On this Day of Atonement, I ask forgiveness if I have not lived up to this high aspiration. As this chapter in my life and our life together nears its conclusion, I want to take this opportunity to recognize and thank all who have contributed day in and day out for the betterment of this institution, the dedicated men and women with whom I've had the privilege to work with throughout the years I've been privileged to serve as your rabbi. In no particular order, I thank our maintenance and security teams, especially Jeannie and Joe, Moses and Joshua and Tim, our administration and support staff, including Murray and Merle and Ann, and a special shout out to Joe Ruddy, who's been at Congregation Kol Tikva only a year or two less than me, and a dear friend and support through many transitions over the years. I thank Sydney and Deborah and Jessica and Lolly and Justin for being the best team I've ever worked with in terms of their professionalism, their passion, their dedication, and the pursuit of excellence in all that they do, day in and day out. We have so much to be proud of because of the leaders you have all chosen. I am especially grateful to two clergy partners I have been blessed to serve with, Malcolm and Debbie. There's Debbie. While very different in their styles and demeanor, both have been the greatest blessing any rabbi could ever ask for. Their immense talent, their commitment to fulfill pastoral duties and be a partner in all things shouldered by Clay Kodesh, especially on the Bima, is matched only by their stellar character, endless care, their compassion, and their humility and modesty in serving God and the Jewish people. More than any of the above, however, I extend immense gratitude to the lay leadership I've been privileged to partner with. All the above receive a paycheck. Everyone else contributes not only of their financial assets, but with their boundless commitment of time and energy. First, I will forever be grateful to the presidents with whom I have been blessed to call my partners in the sacred work we do together. I especially thank, as I always say, he'll always be my first, Bob Greenberg, Jerry Pomerantz, Scott Carlin, Barbara Weinstein, Andrew Rader, and Alan Rosen. To be a synagogue president is a huge commitment, with hours upon hours of time needed to not only deal with everyday issues like security and budget and HR and building up cake and so much more, but to be steadfast in helping the synagogue to fulfill its mission and ensure its viability for years to come. There is surely a special place in heaven for these pillars of our community. Next, I thank all the committee chairs I have worked with. There are surely too many to name, but there are a few that have led their committees for either all or a large portion of my time at Kol Tikva. I especially want to thank David Beal and Hedy Sussman from the Arts of Israel Connections Committee, Nancy Nussbaum from Social Action, Jeff Levine from Ritual, Gail Simonowski and Beryl Rome from Adult Ed. I also want to recognize Irene Martin, who has assisted me, and even before I arrived, in making sure that there are bagels for Bagels and Bible. Equally so, I want to thank Lois Rubin for her assistance in helping me administer our weekly Talmud 101 class for 17 years. Indeed, I thank every one of you as members of this Kehillah Kedoshah for giving me the privilege of serving as your rabbi, for letting me part of some of your most memorable life cycle milestones, and for trusting and loving support through good times and some really tough times. I also want to acknowledge and thank my mother and father, Zichronam Livracha, may their memories be a blessing. For none of us can achieve anything without the love of parents, and guidance and inspiration, shoulders upon whom we stand. Think of my grandparents who influenced me greatly to choose this vocation. And I think of my two great spiritual mentors, Rabbi Jonathan Stein and Rabbi Henry Cohen, whose talit I wear. My rabbi, the one who inspired me to be a rabbi. Finally, and first and foremost, I thank my family. My three girls who grew up as RKs, rabbi's kids, having to live in that proverbial fishbowl where they were held to sometimes unfair standards of behavior, exposed to unsolicited opinions and judgments. As they grew older, all three, Ariel, Taya, and Ashira, became my greatest fans, giving me confidence when I needed it most. More than anyone, however, I give my heartfelt appreciation to my Sabbath queen, my life partner, my best friend, my soulmate of 42 years, my beloved Linda. She is the one who knew me before my career began, who agreed to be uprooted 5 different times as we moved from congregation to congregation, who stood by my side through some of the most trying times of my life, whether through the tragedies like MSD or nasty synagogue politics. Linda is the one who allowed me to tend to the needs of the congregants, often having to shoulder the responsibilities of parenting alone. It's a tough thing to share your husband with anywhere between 300 and 1,200 other families, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. If I have succeeded at my career at all, it is due completely to the loving embrace of my greatest supporter, my most trusted confidant, and toughest critic. Never one to seek the spotlight, Linda is and has been the wind beneath my wings, providing for my mundane everyday needs, as well as my emotional well-being. Linda, this year of celebration, as I conclude my career, is equally all about you. And I shall be forever grateful that we have shared this journey together. Speaking of journeys, I end my sermon by reminding you that this is not the end, but rather the beginning of another chapter in our lives together. I look forward to serving proudly as your Rabbi Emeritus. We intend to stay in Parkland. And after you welcome my successor and allow him or her to become your new rabbi, gain your trust and not live in my shadow. I hope to still be involved as a fellow congregant, as this is and always will be my extended Jewish family, my spiritual home. Whenever we finish a book of the Torah and start a new one, we pronounce the words emblazoned on this amud, this lectern, words chosen by this congregation, chazak, chazak, benit chazik. Be strong, be even stronger, and let us strengthen one another. As one era ends and another begins in the life of our congregation, may this Kehila Kedoshah go Michayo Lechayo from strength to even greater strength in fulfilling the terms of the covenant made at Sinai so long ago. Summarized by the prophet Micah with these immortal words and the words that I leave you with because they are the north star by which I've tried to live my life. Higid Lecha Adam Atov. It has been told you, O man, what is good. And what God requires of you, ki'im, only this, lasot mishpat, do what is right and just, at least as often as we can, to live a life of integrity, to do the right thing, especially when no one's watching, to love one another, Havat Chesed, with kindness, compassion, giving people the benefit of the doubt. Hatznei lechet im Elohecha. And walk ever humbly with our God. Ken Yiratzon, and let us say.